Welcome to the Christian Romance Book Club podcast, powered by FamilyFiction.com and hosted by Erica Rodriguez Well. This show is for readers of all types of Christian romance fiction. Tune in every episode for updates and author interviews. Whether you love contemporary romance, romantic suspense, historical romance, or Amish romance. Want to talk Christian romance in between episodes? Join our private book club group on Facebook and visit our website at FamilyFiction.com. Join our family at Patreon.com/FamilyFiction and subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. And now for your host, Erica Rodriguez Well.
Welcome to the Christian Romance Book Club podcast. I'm Erica Rodriguez Well. In our private Facebook group, our featured book for the month of November is the Amish romance Morning Star by Charlotte Hubbard. When five maidels join forces to turn an abandoned barn into an Amish marketplace, the unmarried women have community in mind, but their fledgling enterprise promises to reap surprising rewards for each in turn, including the gift of unexpected love. Would you like to join the conversation? In the show notes for this episode, find a link to join the private Facebook group. We'll be discussing the book inside the group the week of November 23rd. Are you an author or publisher who wants to be featured in the book club? Email Ross at FamilyFiction.com for more information. When we come back, my interview with author Rosanna M. White.
This spot is where sponsored books are going to be mentioned. Are you an author or publisher? Do you wish I was talking about your book right now? Find out how to sponsor an episode of the Christian Romance Book Club podcast by emailing Ross at FamilyFiction.com.
And now, my interview with author Rosanna M. White.
Welcome to the podcast. It's such a pleasure to have you here today.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
A Portrait of Loyalty is your third of three novels in the Codebreaker series. Mm-hmm. Share with us when the series is set and what ties the books together.
All right. The series takes place in the end of World War I, basically the last year of the war. It's almost entirely in London, England, where a code-breaking division had been set up at the beginning of the war. Super secret part of the intelligence, naval intelligence. And so when I learned about them, I was just so intrigued because these were the predecessors to the better-known Bletchley Park during World War II. But it was just a group of people who were pulled out of other services. There were bankers and professors and linguists and, all sorts of people, all sorts of backgrounds pulled together because they had this knack for decoding things. So as I learned about them, it was just so intriguing. These people from different backgrounds pulled together and they changed the tide of the war time and time again. So I was like, I have to write about this. So that's kind of the thread that goes all through. But of course I made up fictional characters to put inside this historical background and, gave them romances to play out through the intrigue of war and intelligence and code breaking.
Oh, that's so exciting. So this is your second series, isn't it, set during World War I?
Yeah, that's right.
So what is it especially about this time period that intrigues you so?
It's kind of hilarious. I keep finding myself writing about wars, and I never meant to. I don't like writing about wars particularly, but they're just so rich in conflict and intrigue that it's interesting. So I kind of just fell into it. It started by writing Edwardian. Everyone was looking for Downton Abbey flavored stuff several years ago. So my agent actually said, "Hey, do you have anything Edwardian?" And I was like, "Edwardian? What? Huh?" So I actually did some research and rewrote a book to be Edwardian, which was The Lost Heiress. And then I just kind of fell in love with the era. And when Bethany House said, "Hey, stay here," I was like, "All right." So that kind of the Edwardian era just leads straight into World War I, So I just learned things that were interesting and kept writing about them. So.
How exciting. That's really fun, though. Did you always want to do historicals, like when you started writing?
Yeah, it was definitely my first love. Back in the day, I'm one of those people who've been writing stories since I was six. And so, when I got over writing about princesses and magical bunnies and unicorns, it was really historicals. It's what I loved. I read the Mandy books back when I was a kid, so, they're historical. And then I moved on from there to Laurie Wick, who's largely historical, and it was just a passion of mine. So I always used to sit in history class taking furious notes, not about what might be on the test, but what would make a lovely story.
paying attention.
Oh, I was paying attention, and I passed the test, no problem, you know, got good grades. But yeah, any note-taking was purely for fictional purposes.
Sweet, oh my goodness. So tell us specifically then about A Portrait of Loyalty.
So this one actually takes us through the very end of the war, and I follow two characters. We have Lily Blackwell, who is a photographer. She's actually a photography expert. She does photoshopping before Photoshop was a thing, so actual retouching, rebuilding photographs, like cutting with scissors and scalpels and pasting literally onto things. I was like, wait, people did this before computers?
Yes.
So I actually learned about the Admiralty's photographers in this book called Blinker Hall Spymaster, which I've used as my resource book for the entire series. And there was just one line about how at the very end of the war, the thing that helped end it was this fake photograph that was leaked to the Germans. And I was like, wait, fake photograph? This ended the war? Who did it? I want to know about the photographer. So I just decided I'd make her up. Since I had no historical information, I just made it up. And then I put it together with another historical piece of information that I fictionalized, which is a Russian cryptographer from Russia's equivalent of Room 40, the code-breaking division, before the Russian Revolution, who, because he was in the Navy and well-known by the Tsar, he was on the hit list, basically, when the Bolsheviks took power, so he had to flee. So historically, this man's name was Ernst Federline, and he came to England and started working for Room 40. He was older than I wanted my character to be, already married, brought his whole family over, so that wasn't quite the story I wanted to tell, but I just borrowed it. I was inspired by the story, so I made up my own character, who I named Zivin Marin, who has basically the same background, the same setup. I just made him up.
Oh, wow. That's intriguing. How far do you use, are you comfortable taking it when you want to remain loyal to historical facts, but you also need to make an interesting story? Where's the line there?
That it's always something that we have to debate, you know?
Yeah.
So I basically try, I never want to defame anyone. I never want to mess with a person's actual history. And events, I like to maintain the general integrity of events. But I'm also willing to say, okay, well, here's the historical framework. How can I work within that to tell a good story? What do I need to add? What do I need to subtract? Basically, as long as it's plausible and doesn't compromise the real feel of it or the truth of an era. So like in book one in the series, The Number of Love, I created a bombing raid. It didn't happen on that day, but there were plenty of others around that it was feasible. So I figured no one's going to know if I create one. No one's going to care. And, you know, so in this one, I did this with the historical character that I made the historical character the boss of my hero. And, you know, so I still have that he's there. And then I explain it in an author's note. Whenever I change things, I like to mention it so people don't think that I'm just confused or something.
Yes. So that's always good.
You can change facts here and there as long as you just try to keep in mind that there were real people and you don't want to give anyone a bad name or have them doing things that they never would have done. You want to stick with the, you know, the general idea and integrity of someone and something, but then it's fiction. Make stuff up. That's what we're here for.
Exactly. So was it World War I that it's inspired this particular story? What really made you want to tell what's going on in A Portrait of Loyalty?
It was just so intriguing to learn about the different things that came together in this intelligence operation. Someone like a photographer who's an artist, you know, this is what she does. She manipulates photographs. This is an art form. And then the idea of taking someone who had been at the top of his game in Russia, like one of the leading people in their intelligence division, and go from being in authority to coming to England and just being one of 40 code breakers who has no authority, who's probably not trusted right away. You know, people are going to view him with suspicion. What in the world must that be like? And plus, there's the backdrop of the Russian Revolution, which is crazy in and of itself. So there was just so many intriguing pieces that came together that I couldn't help but wonder, you know, what would it have been like to be doing this? And, you know, to go through these huge life-changing things and have your life threatened and have to, you know, leave your home and everything you love behind. And it just always makes me wonder at, you know, the hearts of these people that would, that had to make these hard choices.
Yeah, there's so much at stake during a world war. Well, how about you tell us a little bit more, because you mentioned that Lily is a photographer, she's an artist, and Zivon coming over, what makes them compelling to you? I mean, maybe it's obviously their what they do, but you wanted to tell their romance.
Right.
So.
Yeah, so what they actually ended up using as the tagline on the back of the book and on all of my promotional materials, which I love, was that she sees the beauty in a world he thought was destroyed, and he sees the pattern in what she thought was chaos. So they come at life with these very different perspectives. He's very much focused, not so much on mathematics, but on, you know, everything should make sense. Everything is rational. Everything is reasonable. If you can just see the pieces, you can anticipate what to do next. And she has that real artist's eye where she stops in the middle of a walk and, you know, gets down on the sidewalk to get this picture looking up through the trees. And so she views things through an artist's lens and doesn't notice patterns and doesn't, you know, pay attention to the facts of life so much as the lens through which we see them. So when you pair them together, you get this really interesting way of seeing the different parts of the world and how we can view it in different ways and really how our own hearts come out through the way we view the world. So I just thought it would be really cool to pair, you know, two opposites like that and see how they can strengthen each other.
That makes it even better to want to read more of this. Because I'm already like smack in the middle of it. It's like, oh, this is good. So while you wrote your story, did any of the characters surprise you as you developed them?
Hilariously, I wrote these two characters twice because this is one of those books that I turned in and then rewrote the whole thing in revisions.
Really? Are you kidding?
A large, large chunk of it. I like forgot a plot. You know, who needs a plot? So there were major changes. But I love the way the characters came to life in draft two. So I don't know that it was so much a surprise as I really had to dig deep to pull them out and to make them the characters I wanted them to be and really dig into the heart of them. So I'm glad I was able to take the time to do that. But I think I was just really intrigued by the lessons they had to learn, and especially Zivon, who's coming from, you know, this really tumultuous place in history. You know, his entire life was uprooted. He suffered huge losses in the beginning of the revolution. So he has this civil war at home. There's the world war still going on. And there's a war with him and his own brother, too. So it's everything is tumultuous for him. So the more I dug into what must that be like for this poor fellow, the more I realized he had these layers that I had to explore. And, you know, a couple key themes that came out about how do you forgive somebody? How do you want mercy for people who have hurt you? You know, because he basically had an entire country full of enemies at home who wanted him dead. And what are you supposed to do with that? You know, how are you supposed to be a man of faith when there's this entire political party out to get you? So it begged some really interesting questions that I really liked being able to dig into.
Oh, wow. So are those the spiritual themes you're exploring in the book?
Yeah. The main theme is craving mercy for your enemies above justice for yourself. So, you know, how do you want their soul to be saved more than you want justice for those who were hurt in your life? So that was kind of borrowed from C.S. Lewis a little bit. You know, if you're going to take inspiration from someone, he's a good person.
That's a good one. Yeah. That's a great one to get inspiration from. Wow, mercy for your enemies. That's getting in on a deeper level, because it's one thing to forgive them.
Yeah.
Mercy is really the next step, isn't it?
Yeah.
So did you wind up with a favorite character out of your series, if you want to look at all three books?
This is always such a hard one because, you know, they're all my babies.
Yes, they are.
I love them all. I think the most fun to write, like, I love different parts of all of them, but the one that was just like joy to write, like hilarious, was Camden from book two, because he was so snarky and, you know, burying this heart of gold under this really gruff exterior. And that's just fun to write because I just get to be witty and hilarious and clever. And so I may have enjoyed that a little too much.
You based A Portrait of Loyalty in England during World War I. with a Russian love interest. And you have an artist thrown in there, you know, as a bonus. And she's really key because you have her looking at life through her artist lens. So which of these areas did you find to be the most challenging, really, as you developed? Because you said you already had to go again in for the characters. Right. So
I think it was probably just the intimidation factor of the Russian thing. Because, I mean, I've been writing England for a lot of books now in this same era, and World War One from the English side for, you know, quite a few books now. So I felt like I had a decent handle on that. But it's really intimidating to try to tackle this whole other social movement that is very complex. And, you know, I can only scratch the surface of it. And so it was probably the Russian angle for sure, trying to figure out how to look fairly at both sides of their revolution. So I did that by having characters who are Bolsheviks and having, you know, Zivin, who is definitely not and is a czarist and is fleeing to England. And trying to weigh both sides to see the point of the socialist movement, where they went wrong, what they may have had right, and, you know, because we tend to view that through a certain lens too, right? You know,
absolutely.
The Communist Party, they're not our friends. But they had a few valid points, so I wanted to give a fair shake to that and just understand the culture that led to this huge upheaval in Russia. And just try to see enough of it through Zivin's eyes that it would make sense and it would be real and it would be something that would send a man halfway across the world to run for his life, but that would never leave him. Like, the Russian culture is very community oriented and it's very tight knit. And so there is actually even a Russian Orthodox church in London, one Russian church
yeah.
in London,
yeah.
in all of England at the time. But they were a really tight-knit community, so I had a fun time kind of pulling that in a little bit, too, and just showcasing a little taste of their culture. So it was a challenge, but it was a whole lot of fun.
It's lovely because you get to see a whole...
Absolutely.
And truly celebrate this is what God has made.
Yeah.
That's just really neat.
Yeah, it is. And it's especially fun when you look at the Orthodox Church, the Greek and the Russian Orthodox. Even their dates are different. They go on a different calendar. So it was fun to even include that. Like, Zivin has to do this mental calculation of, well, it would have been, you know, March 13th in my date, but it's, you know, March 29th in your date. And she's like, what? Because most of us don't think about that. But so it's fun to highlight the differences and yet realize that at the core, you know, we all have this same faith and we all have this love for Christ and desire to be like him. So the things that transcend and the things that are different, and it's just so much fun to dive into.
Oh, that's just beautiful. So I've really enjoyed, I think I just started chapter 3, your lush prose.
Oh, thank you.
And I was reading how in your bio, you have long claimed that words are the air you breathe, you know, and I think it really shows because there's just this beauty in your phrasing, you know.
Thank you. That I definitely enjoy the crafting of words. The art of stringing words together is a big passion of mine too. So
yeah, it completely shows. It's really beautiful. So I wanted to mention that. What would you like your readers to take away after having read A Portrait of Loyalty?
I think kind of what we've already hinted at, that there is the question of forgiveness. And that's a big one. There's, you know, there's how we deal with grief, which comes up a lot in the story. And then there's that step farther that God will take us, where he'll say, okay, you've got that part down, but now it's time to really examine your heart and examine your own biases and, you know, question where you're clinging to bitterness and hatred and even just prejudice, and how can you reconcile that with being like Christ? And he shows us by, you know, hanging on the cross and forgiving the people who put him there, right?
Yeah.
How do you get to that point where you can love the very people who are harming you and harming those you love? How do you get there? So that's kind of the question that I want people to be asking and exploring and challenging themselves on, because it's hard. If it were easy, you know, then it wouldn't be such a big deal. But it's something we all have to deal with, whether it's political enemies. We hear a lot of us versus them with politics these days, right?
Yeah.
And racial tensions and so many things. So many times this comes up. And how do we dig past it? And how do we get to the point where we can look at them as individuals and not judge them as a group? And, you know, forgive and crave mercy for their souls. So Yeah, it's a big one, but that's what I hope people ponder.
It's intense and thought-provoking. Here you frame it within the World War context, but okay, how do we do that within the context of our own space?
Right.
Oh, that's a scary question.
It is.
That's a good question. It seems so fun and light now. What's your favorite way for your readers to keep in contact with you? Putting a whole lighter spin on things now.
Yeah, whole lighter spin. Yeah, I'm pretty much everywhere. So you can message me through Facebook. You can send me a message through my website. I do send out newsletters every week that include a snippet of my blog post and anything going on. I have a store on my site where I sell signed books. So you can pretty much get in contact with me anywhere. And I am addicted to email, so I am checking it constantly and replying very quickly. So
yay.
This is not a distraction at all. So I'm very approachable. You can contact me pretty much anywhere.
I know this will probably change because by the time we air this, it will be a little different. But can you give us a peek into what you're working on?
Sure. At the moment, there's a book coming in between two series. So when The Codebreakers ends and before a new series begins, there's a standalone novel releasing called Dreams of Savannah that is Southern American, obviously, taking place during the Civil War. So that's just a kind of, it's one between things, you know.
Yeah.
And then my new series is called Secrets of the Isles, and it's set on the Isles of Scilly, which are off the coast of Cornwall in England. So it's a really unique little island culture, and it's super fun. So I have pirate treasure and treasure hunting and mistaken identities, and it's set earlier. It's in 1906. So it's just light and fun in a way, but also, you know, ask some fun questions about science and faith and how the two work together. And I'm having a blast. I'm editing that right now. So as of when we're recording this, I'm editing, but then I will be writing the next book in the series. So it's a kind of breath of fresh air after dealing with war for six books.
Absolutely.
But I think it'll be really fun.
Indeed. I like the whole idea of pirates and stuff. That sounds like fun.
Right? So much fun.
Yes. Thank you. Oh my goodness. Thank you so much for your visit, Rosanna. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Christian Romance Book Club podcast, brought to you by familyfiction.com and hosted by Erica Rodriguez Well. Are you an author or publisher? Find out how to sponsor the show by emailing ross@familyfiction.com. Join our private book club group on Facebook. Become a member of our family at patreon.com/familyfiction. And subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. That's it for this episode of the Christian Romance Book Club podcast. We'll see you again next time.